let's move to Walker. Can we? Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And Ken, as I'm very rudely interrupted, the art critic of the New York Times, mid-sentence, when he was about to tell us something incredibly insightful about Hockney, tell us something incredibly insightful about John Walker.
Oh, wow.
Ken, what did you think of John Walker?
I think they are cliched at every level.
They are cliched at every level, he says.
Yeah. I think he's a bad painter.
But not in the good sense of a bad painter.
Yeah. I mean, from the this notion of his peninsula in Maine abstracted into this these generic marks and that kind of thick crusty paint, on the one hand you've got this kind of sentimentalist notion of the Maine seacoast. I grew up in Maine. It's a very depressing place to grow up, but and on the other hand, that sentimentalization of paint as paint, like if it's thick and piled on, it has some substance to it. I think the colors are awful, and the parts where he's got the aerial view of the peninsula, and then he makes a horizon line with the sun, is terrible. Using the Beano cards, I don't know, that just seems like an affect that seems, you know, doesn't carry, I don't know, it's a trick that doesn't interest me in the least.
We'll get you something else for Christmas. Marjorie.
Hello. I have a somewhat different take on the show. Maybe my take is too academic, but what I see in the work is an attempt to keep the flame alive from within a primitivist or vitalist, if you're Nietzsche, tradition of expressive use of essential forms. So instead of a point, a line, and a plane, he has a blob, a smear, and a shape. But we get the lexicon, and that's a kind of elementary formal lexicon within which he positions or tries to extrude or tries to express a primitivism. There is a cliche there, which I believe to be his position of essential modernism, to which he adheres and with which he tries to make a painting, refreshing that each time. However, I do see it as somewhat derivative. Obviously, if one takes a position of the syncretic, of amalgamating the formalist vocabulary with an expressive touch that is locatable in early modernity, whether it is Jack Yeats or Jack Yeats plus Hartley plus Milton Avery, one can read the paintings maybe a little too clearly for their genealogy. As far as the small paintings with the Beano text, just an asterisk here, Walker was beguiled by seeing Beano cards in an attic, and he understood that to be the underground way of playing bingo. But what I found quite irritating is that Walker's work, utilizing those Beano cards, was an unconvincing use of pasted paper or collage. I found the small works unresolved. The larger works were resolved within their own terms.
Yes, that's fascinating. Thank you. I think that all your art historical points of reference are totally taken, but I would then add an update, perhaps. Munch via Jasper Johns, and the palette of Anselm Kiefer. But I would say, I would actually make a bit more of a case for them. I would say that he is somebody who was schooled in a reductive modernism, and so therefore the deployment of the signifiers, as you say, is kind of very legible. But he's seeking through the act of painting and seeing, I believe, to try to really access and activate a neo-romanticism. And I was once a great devotee of neo-romanticism. By the time I discovered John Walker, my affection for neo-romanticism was beginning to wane, and that's unlucky for my relationship with John Walker. But I can see, however, a considerable degree of acumen in these works. I think there is a genuine pleasure in both making and seeing, albeit that the originality is not as substantial as it needs to be in successful romantic painting for me. But I would give it much higher points than Ken. Joan.
I think for me, listening to the three of you talk about those paintings, I must have heard the word try like 5, 6, 7 times. And for me, that's very indicative of what the problem is there. Like I went in, I really wanted to like those paintings. I remember being at the Albee Foundation and living with one of his paintings from the 70s for a month out there and really getting a relationship to that painting. And so I had greater expectations maybe. But he doesn't, for all the wonderful references that Marjorie elucidated for us, I think he just fails to ignite. You know all that stuff, and for all the people who've studied all those things and they have all that kind of information in their heads when they go in, there's still the bare fact that you got to stand in front of the painting and something has to happen for you while you're there in the presence of the work. And, I stayed there for a long time and I just couldn't get anything to happen. So I felt like I was trying way too hard.
Let's see if our audience can elucidate Walker for us and defend Hockney for us, because I don't think either of those artists got the love that they may feel they deserve from this particular panel. But the panel is now a bigger panel. Let's hear more critique. So responses to the two artists we've been looking at.
I found both of them to be sort of awkward. I didn't used to think John Walker was awkward, but I do think these paintings are awkward, and I've always thought that David Hockney's work was awkward, and I feel that the iPad drawings were pretty lightweight that they just did not have the feeling of substantialness that at least Walker's paint handling has a feeling of substantiality.
Okay, thank you. Yes, a hand towards the back.
I found it interesting the way the artists were divided in groups of two, and then the painters being the second group. It's almost as though, in a way, going backwards, but I found in both the Hockney and the Walker show that kind of work demands more time to appreciate what's happening in them. For example, the Hockney show, after seeing it the first time, I felt the technique was maybe too much of an issue with the way they were fabricated with the iPad. But then, going back a second time, looking at the drawings first in the front room, the chart, which I found beautiful, those charcoal drawings I thought were gorgeous, and then walking into the back room with the screen first as you're entering the space and moving into that space, and then seeing what he did with the iPad and how beautiful those works are. If you get a little distance from them and you don't pay as much attention about how they're fabricated, and you actually look at the reflection, the light, the depth of color, they're gorgeous. But it took me, I will admit, a second visit to get past the technical element in the work and actually see the work for the beauty that was there. That's one. Now, Walker is a whole nother thing. I've known the work for many years, so it's hard for me to be objective about where that work is now in relation to all the other work that he was doing in the past. And just as the panel referred to Hockney's pool painting as kind of this height of his accomplishment, I also think with a painter like Walker, you have to see the work in the context of the whole career in a way, if you want to really see what he's coming out of and where this imagery has evolved from. So I think it's hard to judge a show by either of those two artists solely by, or singularly by looking at what they've accomplished in the past as though this is somewhat of a downturn in both cases, that I think I give them credit for moving on with their work. You're mentioning Hockney's beautiful drawings back early in his career. Yes, I agree, those are gorgeous. The drawings are brilliant, and the paintings at that time. But he moved on. And I have to say that Walker has as well, and I admire them for that.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Another comment, yes.
I just wanted to say that I found it interesting. We didn't talk about the Hockney works at all as prints, but I just saw them as another form of printmaking. Not drawings or paintings.
Okay, thank you.
Art historical remark. David Hockney was, in fact, a major influence on me. I'm Peter Fendt, and it was very, very on point. And I had never recognized that until you raised that point today, that Hockney's pool paintings had a huge impact on my ideas about art.
Whose ideas?
I'm Peter Fendt.
You're Peter Fendt.
He impacted
he
me.
Had an impact on you. How extraordinary. Could you elaborate? Or maybe we should invite you back another evening to elaborate, but could you elaborate?
Because the painting on the cover of the book about Los Angeles, the four ecologies of Los Angeles, had a major impact on me, and actually on what I began to do in the 70s, in terms of, direct bang.
Well, we've arrived at the horse's mouth, so to speak. I would like to make an announcement, however, as we got, as you're there and you're sitting and you're waiting. We have the lineup for the November panel. All the details will be at artcritical.com. Sarah Douglas, Edward M. Epstein, and Lance Esplund join me on November the 21st to discuss Marina Abramović at Sean Kelly, Tommy Hartung at On Stellar Rays, Ragnar Kjartansson's 6-hour video in Luring Augustin, Bushwick. You've always wanted to spend a whole day in Bushwick, I know. And Ursula von Reidingsvard's latest work at Gallery Lelong. So ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much. See you.